Chapter 38. Have been peeping out of that there hole. Now you can go home, and be up here again by breakfast time. I be an old man, and there's old men that deserve well of the world, but know I must rest how I can. The elder shepherd then lay down inside the hut, and the boy went down the hill to the hamlet where he dwelt. Second night, when the next night drew on, the actions of the boy were almost enough to show that he was thinking of the meeting he had witnessed, and of the promise wrung from the lady that she would come there again. As far as the sheep tending arrangements were concerned, tonight was but a repetition of the foregoing one. Between 10 and 11 o'clock the old shepherd withdrew as usual for what sleep at home he might chance to get without interruption, making up the other necessary hours of rest at some time during the day. The boy was left alone. The frost was the same as on the night before, except perhaps that it was a little more severe. The moon shone as usual, except that it was 3/4 of an hour later in its course. And the boy's condition was much the same, except that he felt no sleepiness whatever. He felt, too, rather afraid, but upon the whole he preferred witnessing an assignation of strangers to running the risk of being discovered absent by the old shepherd. It was before the distant clock of Shackiferous Towers had struck 11 that he observed the opening of the second act of this midnight drama. It consisted in the appearance of neither lover nor duchess, but of the third figure, the stout man, booted and spurred, who came up from the easterly direction in which he had retreated the night before. He walked once round the trilithon, and next advanced towards the clump concealing the hut, the moonlight shining full upon his face, and revealing him to be the Duke. Fear seized upon the shepherd boy. The Duke was Jove himself to the rural population, whom to offend was starvation, homelessness, and death, and whom to look at was to be mentally scathed and dumbfoundered. He closed the stove, so that not a spark of light appeared, and hastily buried himself in the straw that lay in a corner. The Duke came close to the clump of firs and stood by the spot where his wife and the captain had held their dialogue. He examined the firs, as if searching for a hiding place, and in doing so discovered the hut. The latter he walked round, and then looked inside. Finding it to all seeming empty, he entered, closing the door behind him, and taking his place at the little circular window against which the boy's face had been pressed just before. The Duke had not adopted his measures too rapidly, if his object were concealment. Almost as soon as he had stationed himself there, 11 o'clock struck, and the slender young man who had previously graced the scene promptly reappeared from the north quarter of the down. The spot of assignation having, by the accident of his running forward on the foregoing night, removed itself from the devil's door to the clump of firs, he instinctively came thither, and waited for the Duchess, where he had met her before. But a fearful surprise was in store for him tonight, as well as for the trembling juvenile. At his appearance the Duke breathed more and more quickly, his breathings being distinctly audible to the crouching boy. The young man had hardly paused, when the alert nobleman softly opened the door of the hut, and, stepping round the firs, came full upon Captain Fred. "You have dishonored her, and you shall die the death you deserve." Came to the shepherd's ears, in a harsh, hollow whisper through the boarding of the hut. The apathetic and taciturn boy was excited enough to run the risk of rising and looking from the window, but he could see nothing for the intervening furze boughs, both the men having gone round to the side. What took place in the few following moments he never exactly knew. He discerned portion of a shadow in quick muscular movement. Then there was the fall of something on the grass. Then there was stillness. 2 or 3 minutes later the Duke became visible round the corner of the hut, dragging by the collar the now inert body of the second man. The Duke dragged him across the open space towards the trilithon. Behind this ruin was a hollow, irregular spot, overgrown with firs and stunted thorns, and riddled by the old holes of badgers, its former inhabitants, who had now died out or departed. The Duke vanished into this depression with his burden, reappearing after the lapse of a few seconds. When he came forth, he dragged nothing behind him. He returned to the side of the hut, cleansed something on the grass, and again put himself on the watch, though not as before, inside the hut, but without, on the shady side. "Now for the second," apostrophe he said. It was plain, even to the unsophisticated boy, that he now awaited the other person of the appointment, his wife, the Duchess. For what purpose it was terrible to think. He seemed to be a man of such determined temper that he would scarcely hesitate in carrying out a course of revenge to the bitter end. Moreover, though it was what the shepherd did not perceive, this was all the more probable, in that the moody Duke was laboring under the exaggerated impression which the sight of the meeting in dumb show had conveyed. The jealous watcher waited long, but he waited in vain. From within the hut the boy could hear his occasional exclamations of surprise, as if he were almost disappointed at the failure of his assumption, that his guilty Duchess would surely keep the tryst. Sometimes he stepped from the shade of the firs into the moonlight, and held up his watch to learn the time. About 11:30 he seemed to give up expecting her. He then went a second time to the hollow behind the trilithon, remaining there nearly a quarter of an hour. From this place he proceeded quickly over a shoulder of the declivity, a little to the left, presently returning on horseback, which proved that his horse had been tethered in some secret place down there. Crossing anew the down between the hut and the trilithon, and scanning the precincts, as if finally to assure himself that as he had not come, he rode slowly downwards in the direction of Shackafer's Towers. The juvenile shepherd thought of what lay in the hollow yonder, and no fear of the crooked stem of his superior officer was potent enough to detain him longer on that hill alone. Any live company, even the most terrible, was better than the company of the dead. So, running with the speed of a hare in the direction pursued by the horseman, he overtook the revengeful Duke at the second descent where the Great Western Road crossed before you came to the old park entrance on that side now closed up and the lodge cleared away, though at the time it was wondered why, being considered the most convenient gate of all. Once within the sound of the horse's footsteps, Bill Mills felt comparatively comfortable, for, though in awe of the Duke, because of his position, he had no moral repugnance to his companionship on account of the grisly deed he had committed, considering that powerful nobleman to have a right to do what he chose on his own lands. The Duke rode steadily on beneath his ancestral trees, the hoofs of his horse sending up a smart sound now that he had reached the hard road of the drive, and soon drew near the front door of his house, surmounted by parapets with square-cut battlements that cast a notched shade upon the graveled terrace. These outlines were quite familiar to little Bill Mills, though nothing within their boundary had ever been seen by him. When the rider approached the mansion, a small turret door was quickly opened, and a woman came out. As soon as she saw the horseman's outlines, she ran forward into the moonlight to meet him. "Ah, dear, and are you come?" she said. "I heard Hero's tread, just when you rode over the hill, and I knew it in a moment. I would have come further, if I had been aware, glad to see me, eh?" How can you ask that? Well, it is a lovely night for meetings. Yes, it is a lovely night. The Duke dismounted and stood by her side. "Why should you have been listening at this time of night, and yet not expecting me?" he asked. "Why, indeed. There is a strange story attached to that, which I must tell you at once. But why did you come a night sooner than you said you would come? I am rather sorry, I really am." Shaking her head playfully, "for as a surprise to you, I had ordered a bonfire to be built, which was to be lighted on your arrival tomorrow, and now it is wasted. You can see the outline of it just out there." The Duke looked across to a spot of rising glade, and saw the faggots in a heap. He then bent his eyes with a bland and puzzled air on the ground. What is this strange story you have to tell me that kept you awake? ", he murmured. It is this, and it is really rather serious. My cousin Fred Ogburn, Captain Ogburn as he is now, was in his boyhood a great admirer of mine, as I think I have told you, though I was 6 years his senior. In strict truth, he was absurdly fond of me. ", you have never told me of that before. ", then it was your sister I told. Yes, it was. Well, you know I have not seen him for many years, and naturally I had quite forgotten his admiration of me in old times. But guess my surprise, when the day before yesterday, I received a mysterious note bearing no address, and found on opening it, that it came from him. The contents frightened me out of my wits. He had returned from Canada to his father's house, and conjured me by all he could think of to meet him at once. But I think I can repeat the exact words, though I will show it to you when we get indoors. My dear cousin Harriet, the note said, after this long absence you will be surprised at my sudden reappearance, and more by what I am going to ask. But if my life and future are of any concern to you at all, I beg that you will grant my request. What I require of you is, dear Harriet, that you meet me about 11 tonight by the Druid Stones on Marlberry Downs, about a mile or more from your house. I cannot say more, except to entreat you to come. I will explain all when you are there. The one thing is, I want to see you. Come alone. Believe me, I would not ask this, if my happiness did not hang upon it God knows how entirely. I am too agitated to say more. Yours, Fred. That was all of it. Now, of course I ought to have gone, as it turned out, but that I did not think of then. I remembered his impetuous temper, and feared that something grievous was impending over his head, while he had not a friend in the world to help him, or anyone except myself to whom he would care to make his trouble known. So I wrapped myself up, and went to Marlberry Downs at the time he had named. Don't you think I was courageous? ", very. ", when I got there, but shall we not walk on? It is getting cold. ". The Duke, however, did not move. When I got there he came, of course, as a full-grown man and officer, and not as the lad that I had known him. When I saw him, I was sorry I had come. I can hardly tell you how he behaved. What he wanted I don't know even now. It seemed to be no more than the mere meeting with me. He held me by the hand and waist oh so tight, and would not let me go till I had promised to meet him again. His manner was so strange and passionate that I was afraid of him in such a lonely place, and I promised to come. Then I escaped, then I ran home, and that's all. When the time drew on this evening for the appointment, which, of course, I never intended to keep, I felt uneasy, lest when he found I meant to disappoint him, he would come on to the house, and that's why I could not sleep. But you are so silent. ", I have had a long journey. ", then let us get into the house. Why did you come alone, and unattended like this? ", it was my humor. ", after a moment's silence, during which they moved on, she said, I have thought of something which I hardly like to suggest to you. He said that, if I failed to come tonight he would wait again tomorrow night. Now, shall we tomorrow night go to the hill together just to see if he is there? And if he is, read him a lesson on his foolishness in nourishing this old passion, and sending for me so oddly, instead of coming to the house? ", why should we see if he's there? ", said her husband moodily. Because I think we ought to do something in it. Poor Fred. He would listen to you, if you reasoned with him, and set our positions in their true light before him. It would be no more than Christian kindness to a man who unquestionably is very miserable from some cause or other. His head seems quite turned. ", by this time they had reached the door, rung the bell, and waited. All the house seemed to be asleep, But soon a man came to them, the horse was taken away, and the Duke and Duchess went in. Third night, there was no help for it. Bill Mills was obliged to stay on duty, in the old shepherd's absence, this evening as before, or give up his post and living. He thought as bravely as he could, of what lay behind the devil's door, but with no great success, and was therefore in a measure relieved, even if awe-stricken, when he saw the forms of the Duke and Duchess strolling across the frosted greensward. The Duchess was a few yards in front of her husband and tripped on lightly. I tell you he has not thought it worth while to come again. ... The Duke insisted, as he stood still, reluctant to walk further. He is more likely to come and wait all night, and it would be harsh treatment to let him do it a second time. ... He is not here, so turn and come home. ... He seems not to be here, certainly. I wonder if anything has happened to him. If it has, I shall never forgive myself. ... The Duke, uneasily, oh, no. He has some other engagement. ... That is very unlikely. ... Or perhaps he has found the distance too far. ... Nor is that probable. ... Then he may have thought better of it. ... Yes, he may have thought better of it. If, indeed, he is not here all the time somewhere in the hollow behind the devil's door. Let us go and see. It will serve him right to surprise him. ... Oh, he's not there. ... He may be lying very quiet because of you. ... She said archly. Oh, no, not because of me. ... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.